The First Kings of Judah, Chapter 100. You know that after the death of Solomon, the nation of Israel was divided into two parts, don't you? Jeroboam was made king over 10 tribes, while only 2 tribes remained faithful to Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. Reread Chapter 83. There we told you about the rending of the kingdom. From that time there were 2 kingdoms and 2 kings. The history of the one kingdom, the kingdom of the 10 tribes, we already have discussed with you, and our last chapter was the conclusion. Now we are going to see what type of kings reigned over the kingdom of the 2 tribes. Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, was the first sovereign who reigned over Judah and Benjamin. In the beginning of his reign, he did foolish things. The people asked him kindly if he would ease the heavy taxes which they had to pay. Instead of heeding the wise counsel of the older men, he did what his young friends advised him. He answered the people roughly and unkindly, which was foolish of him, very foolish. And what was the result? Rebellion broke out, and they would no longer acknowledge him as their sovereign. When he saw things were going amiss, he sent a Doram to the people to discuss the situation with them, but the Israelites hated a Doram, and they stoned him. Thereupon Rehoboam fled to Jerusalem, and there he musters his army to punish the rebels. But the prophet Shemaiah warned him in the Lord's name not to do it. He was not permitted to go to battle against the disloyal tribes. It was good Rehoboam listened to this word of the Lord. If he hadn't listened, he would have been defeated, for the Lord would not have helped him. However, he obeyed and remained in Jerusalem. I told you all this before, but I have repeated it here in short because it has been so long since you have read it. Perhaps you will now ask, how did Rehoboam fare? We will tell you now. In our thoughts, we will go to the border between the kingdom of the 10 tribes over which Jeroboam reigns and the kingdom of the 2 tribes over which Rehoboam is king. A group of people approach the border. This group consists of a few men, some women, and even some children. They come from the kingdom of Jeroboam, cross the border, and go into the kingdom of Judah. Yonder a second group approaches. They also travel toward the south. A little later, a third group follows, and so it goes continuously. Day after day, many people leave Jeroboam's empire, and not one of these people returns. Who are they? Why do they migrate? They are the priests and Levites who formerly lived in the kingdom of the 10 tribes. Jeroboam will not permit his people to go to Jerusalem on the great feast days. Therefore he made 2 golden calves, the one at Dan, the other at Bethel. These are the new sanctuaries. In the future they must celebrate their feast there. But the priests and Levites who were living in 48 cities and scattered over the entire land would not offer upon the new altars. They are attached to the service of the Lord in Jerusalem, and they desire to remain with it. Jeroboam makes priests out of every tribe for his golden calves. But the real priests left their homes and possessions and traveled to Jerusalem. They will go to live in the kingdom of Judah. Alas, it was no easy matter for them to leave everything behind. Still, they did it, for they prefer the worship of the Lord. The Lord's service is worth more to them than all earthly possessions. That is the reason we see all those people leaving the kingdom of the 10 tribes. Jeroboam lost all those people, while the priests and Levites became subjects of Rehoboam, the son of Solomon. During the first years of Rehoboam's reign, he worshipped the Lord. Alas, he only did it outwardly. He did not worship the Lord in truth. Still, the Lord blessed him. Not only the priests and the Levites went out of the kingdom of Jeroboam, but also many other people who would not worship the golden calves left their native soil. Especially many converted people, the people of the Lord, migrated from the north to the south of the land. For that reason, Jeroboam became weaker, and Rehoboam became stronger. Rehoboam walked in the ways and laws of the Lord for 3 years. But when Rehoboam became strong and powerful, he left the Lord. He became proud and haughty of his might. He forgot the Lord blessed him and made him strong. Idols also are made in the land of Judah. The people burn offerings upon strange idol altars in the kingdom of Judah too. Rehoboam should have forbidden it, but he said nothing and permitted it. Pitiful, because their prosperity ends abruptly. Unexpectedly, war breaks out. Foreign soldiers invade the land. Shishak, the king of Egypt, marches with an enormous army against Jerusalem, the capital. The land is filled with Egyptians. 1,200 chariots rumble and roll over the roads. 60,000 horsemen race upon their prancing horses. After them, tens of thousands of soldiers march toward Jerusalem in a long, long file. When the inhabitants of Judah see this mighty enemy march by, they are terror-stricken. They will never be able to fight them. This is the Lord's punishment upon that sinful nation. O Rehoboam, why have you forsaken the Lord? Now you can see what the consequence of sin is. The Egyptian army is near Jerusalem. Rehoboam is at a loss what to do. Everything, yes, everything is lost. Soon he will be taken prisoner by Shishak and led away captive to Egypt. He already sees himself walking, bound behind the triumphant chariot of the Egyptian monarch. Prophet Shemaiah enters the royal palace. He has a message for the king, a message from the Lord. You have forsaken me. Therefore, I have left you, the prophet says seriously. Silently, Rehoboam sits upon his throne. What can he say? The prophet speaks the truth. Rehoboam humbles himself before the Lord. He is grieved because of his sins. He bows his head and says softly, "The Lord is righteous." He really means, I deserve this punishment. But now that the king and the princes humble themselves, the Lord promised them a speedy deliverance. God shall send relief. Shishak will march into Jerusalem, and his soldiers will plunder the beautiful city. He will take away all the treasures of Solomon. The Egyptians will take with them all the gold and silver which Solomon had gathered together, the expensive ivory throne, and the 300 golden shields which Solomon had made. Yes, They will take all the wealth which Solomon at his death left to his son Rehoboam. But Shishak did not remain in Jerusalem. He went to his own country, richly laden with spoil. Within a few days, every Egyptian soldier had disappeared. All Rehoboam was so happy he was not carried away captive to Egypt, but that he could remain as king. The Lord sent relief. The Lord delivered him and his people from the enemy. Rehoboam made brass shields instead of the gold ones. In the future, his servants will carry these brass shields. Things went well for a few years, but Rehoboam again forsook the Lord. We read in the Bible, he did that which was evil in the eyes of the Lord. He reigned 17 years over Judah and Benjamin. He died and was buried by his subjects in Jerusalem in the grave of his father Solomon. His son Abijah succeeded him as king. From all sides, the inhabitants of Judah and Benjamin enter the gates of the capital. The streets of Jerusalem rumble with the footsteps of many thousands of soldiers. Constantly, more and more come. Abijah, the new king, sent messengers throughout his entire kingdom, calling his soldiers to the battle. Danger is threatening. War broke out between Abijah, the king of Judah, and Jeroboam, the king of Israel. War between men of the same house. That is terrible. Abijah leaves the capital with his many courageous warriors to meet the enemy. 400,000 soldiers follow him. But Jeroboam also has a mighty army. Yes, it is stronger than the army of Abijah. Jeroboam commands more than 800,000 warriors, twice as many as Abijah. The two armies stand arrayed against each other, ready for the battle. Suddenly, it becomes quiet. Someone is speaking. He is Abijah, the king of Judah. He warns Jeroboam, "Listen to his words. The Lord anointed David to be king over Israel," he says. "The Lord made a covenant with David and his sons. Jeroboam, now you come with a mighty army to fight against me. You have more soldiers than I. Therefore, you think you will win. But do not put too much trust in your enormous army, because you have forsaken the Lord. You serve the golden calves of Dan and Bethel, but we worship the Lord. The temple of the Lord is with us in Jerusalem. We have the priests of the Lord whom you drove away. That is why the Lord will help us and not you. You shall not prosper." These were the words of the king of Judah. Jeroboam listens, but the words of Abijah do not affect him in the least. Oh no, a mocking smile plays around his lips. He is not a bit afraid. Secretly, he surrounds the army of Abijah without Abijah knowing it. A part of Jeroboam's army marches to form a large circle around the army of Abijah. These soldiers hide in the woods, where Abijah cannot see them. When Abijah stops speaking, the battle begins. At a given moment, the soldiers of Jeroboam, who are hiding behind Abijah's army, rise from their hiding place. Abijah now has the enemy on two sides, in the front and the rear. That is very dangerous. Really, it is impossible for Abijah to gain the victory. The men of Judah see that they are surrounded and are exceedingly afraid. In their fear, they cry to the Lord for deliverance from their great distress. The priests of the Lord sound with the trumpets. This distressful cry is answered by the Lord. Although Jeroboam had a more numerous army, and the soldiers of Abijah were already surrounded, still Abijah gains the victory. The soldiers of Jeroboam become confused and terrified. This fear paralyzes their courage. They waver and soon flee in wild disorder. There is no stopping them. Thousands, yes, 10,000s are overtaken and struck down. In the evening of that terrible day, 500,000 soldiers of Jeroboam lie dead upon the bloody battlefield. That is more than half the entire army. The others fled. Oh, war always is very dreadful. Abijah won a glorious victory. The Lord punished Jeroboam in this way, because he made the golden calves and would not listen to the warnings of the Lord. The people of Israel also were punished severely because they followed their king in all the wickedness. Triumphantly, Abijah and his army returned to Jerusalem. The danger is past. The Lord had helped him miraculously. God had changed the threatened overthrow into a glorious victory. Still, Abijah was not a God-fearing king. Oh yes, he did worship the Lord outwardly, but he didn't do it sincerely. He served the Lord for the benefits only, but not because God is so worthy to be served and feared. He thought to himself, I will worship the Lord, and the Lord will bless me. Abijah boasted to Jeroboam that the temple stood in Jerusalem and that the priests of the Lord were with him. But all this was only form. He missed the true upright fear of God. We read in the Bible that he walked in the sins of Rehoboam, his father. Abijah permitted the idols to be worshipped in Judah and Benjamin. He did not prohibit it, neither did his father Rehoboam. That is why we read that he walked in the sins of his father. Oh, boys and girls, what do we do? How many children live respectfully? We go to church and catechism faithfully. This is good. We are duty-bound to do it. But it is not sufficient for eternity. The great question is whether we worship the Lord in truth. Our greatest concern should be whether God has given us a new heart. Abijah was missing this. He did not reign long, only 3 years. When he died, he was buried by his subjects in Jerusalem, the city of David. Idols stood in all places of the kingdom of Judah and Benjamin. They were dead stone images with altars upon which the people offered sacrifices. Wasn't that awful? Yes, and the Israelites even made hills for these idols to be on, so they could be seen from far. One day a group of men approached such a heathen idol. They carry hammers and shovels. They climb the hill and with one blow break the images in pieces. They break down the altar, destroy the high place, and level off the ground. Soon there is nothing to be seen of this idol and high place. They go on to the second idol and grove and do exactly the same with that one. Every idol height and sanctuary throughout the entire land is destroyed and laid in ruins. Oh, is that allowed? Does the king say that can be done? Yes, children, it is the king who gave orders to do it. Who is that king? Why, he is Asa, the king, the son of Abijah. Asa worshipped the Lord. God's word tells us he did that which was right in the eyes of the Lord. When the heathen idols and altars were destroyed, the king said to his subjects that they must worship the Lord. It is a great privilege when the Lord gives any nation a sovereign like that. Judah and Benjamin now live in prosperity and peace. God blessed them in everything, and the Lord's blessing makes rich. In many places, Asa builds cities with wide walls and high towers. This is for safety. Ungodly kings reigned over the 10 tribes of Israel during the days of Asa. They were Baasha, Elah, Zimri, and Omri. Reread it in chapter 85. Therefore, it is not surprising that thousands of Israelites leave the kingdom of the 10 tribes and go to live in the kingdom of Judah and Benjamin. This makes Asa still stronger. However, one day a messenger rides hastily into Jerusalem. Soon thereafter, everyone in the city is troubled. The people gather together to talk. Their faces are serious and fearful. The first soldiers begin to march into the city. Asa quickly sends messengers out to muster his army. What is the trouble? The first messenger had brought bad news. The country is in great peril. A mighty enemy is approaching. Zerah, the Ethiopian, is coming with an army of 1 million soldiers. That is why Asa calls his warriors so hastily to the battle. The enemy is so strong, yes, exceptionally strong. Asa knows he cannot fight against this enemy in his own strength. He will be the loser, that is sure. The land will be overrun by the enemy. Anxious fear comes into his heart. He prays to God. O Lord, he pleads, we cannot fight against this enormous army, but thou art able to help us. O God, deliver us from this enemy and give us the victory. Thou art almighty. We trust and rest on thee, Lord. His prayer is answered by the Lord, and Zerah, the Ethiopian, is completely defeated. They are shamefully driven out of the land. Tens of thousands of hostile soldiers are slain. God has given deliverance. The land is spared from destruction. Asa returns with gladness, and his soldiers sing triumphant songs to the honor of God. When Asa comes near Jerusalem, a prophet meets him. If you will serve the Lord and continue to serve him, the Lord will bless you, this prophet says. But if you forsake the Lord will forsake you. The Lord warns Asa that he must not become proud. God and not he must receive all the honor. Asa's grandmother still lived in Jerusalem. She was an ungodly woman. She did not worship the Lord. She worshipped an hideous idol. This idol also was broken to pieces and destroyed upon the command of Asa. This old woman was angry, but Asa did not concern himself about it. No, he even removed her so she was no longer queen. Asa would sooner have his grandmother angry than to have the wrath of the Lord upon him. The years go by, and not an enemy dares venture to fight against Asa. Judah and Benjamin live in peace for many years. No enemy destroys or plunders their harvests. The Lord cared for them. Oh, if it only had remained so. However, during the end of Asa's life, he began to do wrong and sinful deeds. Isn't that pitiful? Why is this? During this time, Baasha reigns in Samaria, the capital of Israel. You still remember who he was, don't you? Baasha cannot endure the fact that so many Israelites migrate from his kingdom to the kingdom of Judah. He thinks, I will no longer permit this to happen. They must not leave my kingdom. I will stop them. Do you know what he does? His plans are to build a city near the border. He will place a detachment of soldiers in this city to guard the border so that no one will go over it. He brings stones and timber to the place where this city is to be built. Soon a large supply of materials stands ready, and the city will be built from these materials. Asa hears about this. Asa does not ask the Lord for help, but instead he sends gold, yes, a great deal of gold, to Ben-Hadad, the heathen king of Syria. Wrong, Asa. You shouldn't depend upon Syria, but you should depend upon God. Ben-Hadad hearkens to Asa, and the Syrians attack the kingdom of Baasha. Baasha cannot build now, for danger threatens. He, with his army, hastily goes to meet the Syrians. In the meantime, Asa, with his soldiers, takes away all Baasha's stones and timber, and he builds for himself a few cities. Asa thinks, I did this very cleverly. But a prophet comes to Asa and reprimands the king with these words, because you did not rely on the Lord, but made a league with Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, from now on you shall have wars. You have done foolishly. Asa frightens when he hears these words. Instead of humbling himself and asking the Lord for forgiveness, he becomes angry. He locks the prophet in prison. There the faithful prophet sits, innocently locked up as a criminal. Still, he only spoke that which the Lord had commanded. If Asa will not listen, the Lord will send a punishment of greater severity. Both Asa's feet become diseased. He cannot walk. Perhaps he suffers much pain. He calls in a doctor, yes, more than one. They must cure him and take away his sickness. Asa puts his entire trust in the doctors. But if the means are not blessed by the Lord, the physicians cannot do a thing for him, and it all will be in vain. Asa experiences that, and his sickness is not cured, but becomes worse. Finally, he dies. He was king for 41 years. He was buried by his subjects, and he received a kingly burial. In the Bible we read, they made a very great burning for him. They thought a great deal of their king, therefore they still honor him after his death. It was pitiful that Asa, who had begun so well and had served the Lord for so many years, had left the Lord at the end of his life. This is a serious warning for us, boys and girls. Many begin well, but later depart from the truth. In their later years, they live in all manner of sins. How will you live if God spares you in this life? We do not know. The future is hidden from us. God only knows. Ask often if the Lord will keep you from departing from the truth. Only with the help of the Lord will we be able to persevere and follow Him to the end. O children, let your life be a praying life.